How's it going on this Monday?
It's going, man. It's going. So this is like the last full week of classes. Nice. And next week is finals. And then I immediately start teaching summer school at a different school for the summer. So.
Yeah, but that's only like part-time, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're like half days, basically. Deal. But I'm doing it for all of June, so.
I'm a little jealous. It'll be nice, though.
Yeah. Oh, I don't blame you.
Yeah. You know what? I actually saw this meme, or it was a tweet. I don't know what it was, but it was like, field trip, and this just makes me think of like how summer break is wasted on kids. They're like, field trips are totally wasted on kids. Like, could you totally imagine getting a day off work and learning how an old water wheel works? Like,
oh my gosh,
I would love that. Like, these kids don't appreciate anything.
Like, seriously, go to work and find out, okay, hey, just so you guys know, next week, we're going to take a day out of the office.
Bring a Lunchable and a Capri Sun.
Yeah. Yeah, bring some food for yourself. We're going to get on a bus, and we're going to go to the zoo.
Yeah, I would.
And you're going to stay with a group of, like, four people that you pick.
Yeah.
And one chaperone.
Man, I'd be all in.
I would 100%. Sign me up now.
Man. All right, let's hit it. Let's jump into an intro.
Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognize the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation.
All right, man, you had anything good to drink recently?
Yeah, so I, from Wilderness, actually, I picked up something from them in the Build Your Own Sixer. And it is a cactus juice sour. So it's like a prickly pear sour.
Okay.
And it's pretty good. Like, it's a super easy drink. The tart on the sour it's not a ton. Like, it's definitely there.
Yeah.
But it's not, they didn't set out to hurt you with it. But there's like just kind of a finish on it that's like, that there's something.
Yeah.
The prickly pear flavor wasn't like as strong as I was expecting it to be, but when I looked into some of the other stuff in the beer, they also mixed it with like a hibiscus tea from a tea company and stuff. And so, because prickly pear in general is a fairly sweet flavor.
It is, but it's also fairly neutral. It is a really, really light, like, Kristen, she's like, oh, I love prickly pear margaritas. We get the prickly pear margarita. She's like, it doesn't taste like prickly pear. I'd be like, yeah, you say that every single time because, like, it's not going to overpower a lime, you know? Like,
right.
It's super light.
And exactly. And so I didn't realize that there was, like, the tea in here. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, you know what? Actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was expecting, you know, not a dominant flavor of prickly pear, but it was pretty well hidden. So it was a good, super easy drink, and it's only a 4.5% alcohol. So, like, it would be, you know, summer day, yard working, not going to be a problem for you.
Nice.
Like, it's a good, easy drinker, though.
Not bad. Yeah, like, I've had the prickly pear. What was that? Might have been from Grand Canyon. I think they have a prickly pear one out, and same thing, you know, like it's good for marketing, but not a lot for flavor. So like,
right.
You know, like prickly pear beer, like, oh, that sounds awesome. But then it's really just like, it sits in the background and it's just kind of like, you could just kind of add sugar to something and like red food coloring and it would be pretty similar. You know, like, yeah, it
does feel like it's almost it's an obligation flavor.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a brewer in Arizona, it's like, oh, well, we got to throw some of this in there. But yeah, it's not bad. It's a good, easy drink, but it's not one I would particularly go out of my way looking for again.
Sure, sure.
Which, you know, Wilderness in general, most of their stuff when I drink it, I'm like, oh, that's good. This is one of the first ones where I'm like, huh, just kind of, it's all right.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah, I have not had anything interesting in quite a while. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I went and got me another one of those Rogue mixed packs just because, like, that's the best thing that my Walmart carries. And, I'm not mad, but, you know, at the same time, I've also, like, cut my calories back again. You know, like, sure. I got rid of my coach. And so, like, I was like, I'm on my own. And I noticed my weekends started stacking up and they started getting a little out of hand. I was like, okay, all right. So, like,
weird, isn't it? How it's not even that you necessarily need the coaching on what to do. You need to know that you're going to be talking to someone about whether you've done what you need to do or not.
That just accountability. And he never, like, busted my chops. It was just the fact that there was somebody there that could see what I've eaten in a day. It just, like, was next level. So, like, I've also kind of dialed back on it a little bit. So that I'm okay. I'm okay right now, yeah. But I am sitting here going, like, man, I need some interesting flavors. Like, I need to go do something. So I'll have to, like a build your six. Like, there's no reason why I can't go intentionally do something so that I have something to share on the podcast.
Right. Well, and again, like, the other nice thing is when you're doing a build your own sixer thing, you know you're not going to be plowing through calories.
Right.
Because you've got a six pack. And none of them, you know, even the less expensive build your own six pack choices, they're still not going to be, you know, cheap to the point where you're looking to, like, build multiple sixers out of it or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. I tell you what, though, there's been some couple of times this week where I've been like, you know what, like, I could use a drink after having to listen to some of this stuff. And so Peoria has been, like, waist deep in the whole transgender bathroom topic. Mm-hmm. And it is just like it makes it, like, Parks and Rec is just, like, such a true to life TV show. Like, watching that, like, it's so silly because they have to vote in order to end the meeting, you know, and, like, there's all, like, it's so crazy. But, like, just listening to this stuff, you're listening to all these people who are outraged, but they're, like, flying by both above and below the actual topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but, you know, like, if they're more outraged, then that makes it more true. And
well, and it's kind of interesting too, because it's like, is the problem the bathrooms, or are we using the bathrooms as an opportunity to yell about everything that's bothered us for the past, I don't know, how long have we been alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely, like, if there was, yeah, there's no voice of reason. Nobody wants to hear it at all. But amongst one of those, of the topic in general, it's been stirring for a while, and just, like, on the board meetings that Kristen's been listening to, because she does listen to, like, the curriculum and the board stuff every once in a while, just to know what's going on. And in this same vein, they're selecting new textbooks. And so, like, one of the ones in question was the science books. And again, transgenderism influencing the science book. And that one seems crazy to me, right? So, like, science should be, like, the hardest, most unbiased, non-emotional, you know, thing there is. Like it's just is, right? Like, it's...
Yeah, so science is supposed to be the idea of just our observations of the world based on our senses and our attempt to process what we are picking up through those senses and what it means.
Right.
And so it should be a matter of, you know, the scientific method that we all learned when we were in, like, mm-hmm. second grade, you know, hypothesis, test, conclusion.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I'm skipping steps in there, but, like,
yeah,
you know, you're trying to control some variables, but ultimately the result, the answer to the experiment is a win no matter what, whether it agrees with your hypothesis or not.
Right.
Because it's all about, this is the question that I wanted answered. I now have an answer. This is a victory.
Right.
Is how science is supposed to work, theoretically.
Agreed. And so I got, I'm going to go on a short mini rant. And then we'll go into the topic. But, like, I wanted to read, like, a blurb from it here, right? So it says, We now know that sex is not not a binary state with just two defined outcomes. Because of the complexity of the genes and proteins involved in sex determination, many variations exist. And I got stuck on that because, so one of the troubles that we've had in this whole like transgender thing, so this is my mini rant and then we'll get into the topic. And so like first and foremost for me, as like, I don't want to call myself a philosopher because I'm not, but from the philosophical state and the use of language in this conversation drives me up the wall, because they intermix words and they break down words. And so everybody is speaking, but nobody is saying the same thing. So like every word has a different meaning to everyone else. And they're like, oh, well, that's your truth and it's pluralistic. And you're like, no, but we can't. And that's why that meeting, everybody was just flying by each other and not connecting, because everybody's words were different and they didn't mean the same thing. And it drives me nuts. And so like, there's been scientists for, you know, I'm sure you can find a wackadoo that would back up that statement because he's selling textbooks, but there are, most scientists would say that sex is binary, right? Like that is genetic. Like there's things that happen, sure, but like it's pretty right. Binary.
The very rare exceptions of people who are born with, you know, extra chromosomes and things like that
all kinds
complicate
of
it.
There's things that's that are there.
Absolutely true.
Nobody's taking the exception out of it, but that's right. Not the rule, right?
Exactly.
But then they started intermingling gender, which is a social construct, really. Yes. It's the expression of yourself in all of these different ways as your sex and these different things. And so, you know, like my example growing up, like we had a girl that hung out with us. She played basketball. You know, and like she would fist fight you and all the things. And you're like, now she would be a transgender, one of the many different names. And I'm just not really. I'm just like, it's gotten so like confusing that you can't be these things. The words have so many different meanings to them. And, you know, like the problem that I have now is that we're taking all of these like words, we're mixing up the definitions, and then we're pushing it into science. And
well, even before we get to the idea of pushing it into science, like again, the vocabulary is so key, because look, what do we say we're all about? Delicious beverages and meaningful conversation. Mm-hmm. You know what makes it impossible for a conversation to have meaning? Yep. Is if we don't know what our words mean. Yeah. If we don't know what the things we're saying or what's being said to us. And yeah, there's always going to be a need to clarify subtleties and
yes.
differentiations in like some of the unique contexts and things in which we use words.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, for most of our history, we have had the ability to, when I use a word and you use a word, it's in the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
We mean something similar by it.
Right.
And so the ability to, the audacity, really, of trying to have a meeting where you're discussing these things without a common language to discuss them.
Without establishing terms.
Yeah. Of course there's going to be frustration and shouting. Why? Well, because you used the same word I did, but in my hearing, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily because we actually disagree, although there's a really good chance we do, but not necessarily that, because when I used that word, I was talking about this thing over here, mm-hmm. and you were talking about this thing over here.
Right.
Which means, even if, it's kind of like that hypothetical thing, where since we don't know how other people see colors, it's totally possible that when I look at the sky and call it blue, and you look at the sky and call it blue, what you're seeing in your eyes might very well be the color that I would describe as orange.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, because we've both agreed that whatever color that is we're seeing, we've agreed to the same name for it.
Right.
We don't have that in a situation where gender right. and sex are being used interchangeably.
Right. Right. And yes, Oh man, like you're just preaching to the choir here right now, and I just, it's the truth, man. Like, we can't get to these terms. And so that, so mini rant aside, mm-hmm. getting into the science piece of it, yes. is that in all of this, and the reason why bringing up the science textbook and stuff like that is that I feel like listening to all this, because there was, you know, in the meeting, some guy jumped up and felt the need to talk about how these archaic, silly people that believe in a nonsensical God being, and they would believe this stuff. You know, like, there's always that yeah. guy who jumps up there and has to be it. And this got me thinking on how atheistic it's become, right? And not like antagonist, they're more on lines with the antagonistic atheist and the like hyper materialist, mm-hmm. to where like you cannot, in order to be an antagonistic atheist, you have to be hyper materialistic, because you can't like stand the stench of anything that might be considered a faith. Right. And so what they do is they start looking for anything materialistically to explain away what could be construed as a faith.
Sure. I think I want to go back like a half step on it.
Do it.
And bring us back to, because when we're talking about like the transgender stuff, for example, because mm-hmm. even before we get to the idea of materialism or scientism, any of these attempts to, like, ultimately, the problem is no human being can actually function without faith. Mm. Like, it's a question of what we're putting faith into.
Right.
And I think that's where we get back to, like, that idea of the twisting of science, where it is no longer acceptable for my experiment to yield a result different than my hypothesis. It's because my entire life is based in this scientific ideal that everything can be, it does tie into what you were talking about with the like strict materialism. Mm-hmm. Everything must be able to be explained by these observations. But as an important addendum on this rule, it's really important that my observations are always accurate. There's not a whole lot of room for the idea of other observations, other perspectives, other variables being brought in, because I don't have anything else that I can, that I've built my house on. It is the foundation of sand. Like,
yeah.
And so because of that, they become very, very defensive of it, because they know it won't take much of a rainstorm to like wash away their foundation.
Right.
And so we end up doing things like having to say that sex is non-binary. If the claim was gender roles are overly binary and it is foolish to think that every female is going to be what we would describe as feminine, hey, that's a legitimate conversation. Sure. Because feminine and female don't mean the same thing.
Right.
However, once you tell me that it's possible to be female without being female, see, now we've run into that principle of non-contradiction. Mm-hmm. And that's not a religious faith thing. That is like pre-religion understanding of right. things, the basis that we need. But if you are clever enough and well-educated enough to lie to yourself convincingly, then you can come up with these workarounds where, like, no, gender and sex are actually one and the same. Sex is no less a social construct than gender is. Now, most in the science community wouldn't claim that, because they still need the identification of sexuality from a scientific perspective. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, I don't know, man. And I think it's absurd, this dependence on it. It's using the wrong tool, and it can't bear the weight.
Yeah, agreed. And I feel like we've used the slogan of follow the science, and it caught steam and it caught momentum because there was a legitimate case for using a phrase like that, in which people were denying like common sense sure. science. at a time. But then it kind of got piggybacked on by something that, you know, like, oh, this has got some steam. And they used that tool in this completely different arena. And, you know, like, I think back to a conversation I had with a coworker, and he was telling me about the God gene, right? I think I've brought it up once before a long time ago. But, like, he was legitimately trying to tell me and explain to me how I believe in God because I'm genetically predisposed to believe in such things, and some people aren't. Because, again, he was an antagonistic atheist who needed materialistic explanations for everything. And I mean, like, he would go right out of the cuckoo's nest in the, you know, science theory stuff, you know, read a Wikipedia page and be like, yep, that's it. Mm-hmm. I got my answer. But the reason was, is that, like, and I knew from his story, like, he had a death experience, right? Like, where his heart stopped on the table, on the surgeon's table, things like that. And he's like, there was no white light. It's not real. There's nothing there. And so he was then forced with this, trying to reconcile, why are there these people that believe this thing when now I know that there's not, right? He was an enlightened one. And the only way that he could reconcile those things is that if in your genes, which, you know, like, gene expression is the answer to everything, right? And there are those ideas that you are not, you're just an animal, and everything is an expression of your genes. And I just looked at him and I was like, I didn't say anything because, again, interacting with an antagonistic atheist is not worth the breath that I would have spent, in my opinion. And so I think there's something there where it's just like there's this desperate need for an answer and the level of faith, because they don't know. Like, that was just like somebody who's like, oh, hey, we noticed this kind of common thread or common, you know, like, but it answered it for him. And so he needed that answer.
Well, and I think it's the difference between, you know, you brought up the phrase, follow the science. I would still say that is a worthwhile slogan. The problem is we've started to follow the scientist. And that's where the problem comes. Like, no, look at what science actually tells us. You know, look at the fact that the scientific community is constantly making incredible discoveries. However, also look at the fact that in order for science to work, it has to be functioning in non-scientific definitions. Mm-hmm. Like, and what I mean by that is not that it's like contrary to science, but science has to recognize its limits, the things that it can answer and the things that it can't.
Right.
You know, science can look at, theoretically, our DNA and the genetic makeup of individuals and notice various patterns. You know what science can't do? Science can't decide what is and isn't like a person. Like, the idea of a person, the idea of a human being has to be identified before. And then science says, oh, here's the definition of this thing. Does this particular example that I'm looking at, does that meet the criteria and definition to be human? Mm-hmm. Like, science can't do the defining. Science can do the categorizing. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
Science can, like, once we have defined what we mean by a word, science can be really, really helpful at helping us figure out which things fall under that word.
Right.
And again, this is not a disconnect from science. Like, look at the kingdoms and phylums and all of those different, like, species terms. The terms had to be defined first, and then science tells us what falls into these categories. Mm-hmm. It's not actually a scientific process of labeling them.
Right.
Of, like, deciding what the labels are, I mean.
You know, really quick before you keep going, keep your thought. But, like, one of the things as you were leaning in there is there's a lot that, like, a true scientist would have to admit. And I think you find them because, like, who's the dude with the afro?
Neil Tyson deGrasse.
I actually, for he's an atheist, but he's respectable. He's not an antagonistic one. Like, he's actually legit. And but like, they have a humility that say, I don't know. Like, we don't know everything. Right? So like, we know
it.
We know what we know, but we don't know everything. And that, I think, is the difference between, you know, a scientist and an antagonistic atheist who needs for their own assurance to know everything.
Yeah. And I think that's a really excellent way to put it, because that's kind of where I was building towards. But I think you hit it so clearly there with it, is that idea. Anyone who is genuinely seeking truth, there will be humility there.
Mm-hmm.
And that accurate sense of humility, which is not, you know, claiming I know nothing, but like having an accurate sense of what I do and don't know.
Right.
And being willing to work within those confines. And so anyone who comes to you and tells you that, like, you know, this is why even amongst a lot of fairly antagonistic atheists and scientists, Richard Dawkins fell completely out of sway after being like the spokesperson for atheistic science. He fell off the map because people got tired of him saying that he knew things, and then really quickly discovering, oh shoot, he doesn't know this. Mm. He's claiming it. He's not proving it. And that's the thing, is like, yeah, part of science is making claims, but it's being able to identify what type of claim you're making.
Right.
Like, am I saying that this is absolute a knowledge point that we have? Am I saying this is a likely thing mm-hmm. that requires more study? Or am I saying this is a possible thing which requires, like, we haven't even really gotten to the point of being able to establish the variables for it yet to where we could really conduct an experiment.
Right.
But there's some anecdotal evidence in the world around us that says this might be a thing.
Right.
If that guy you were talking about with the God gene, if he had come to you and been like, yeah, you know what? I heard an interesting thing talking mm-hmm. about the possibility that there might be genetic predispositions in people that lead them to be more likely or less likely to believe. You know what? There's a very real part of my brain that would be like, oh, you know what? Honestly, that probably makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That first, I mean, because it's a lived experience for people of faith. That's for some people, faith comes easier than others.
Yeah.
And so that idea of there possibly being, sure, I'm open to that idea. I know jack all about genetics, mm-hmm. so I can't like say, but I could see that being possible. But as soon as he comes to me and tells me, no, it is definitely this. And right. we know that because, look, man, you don't know.
Right.
Like, the number of variables are far too big. At most, the most that could possibly come to is the level of being like, you know what? We've got a theory on this that has some evidence to it. But, you know, one of my favorite, like, Brits who I've been watching on a lot of the British comedian game shows and stuff. He's like a really intelligent, very educated person, because for some reason in England, comedians come from like Oxford and Cambridge. But like this guy, David Mitchell, one of the things he says all the time in very lighthearted settings, but nevertheless, it's like a true scientific principle, is this idea of correlation does not equal causation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you were able to find that, 85% of people in our survey who self-identified as being people of strong faith possessed this particular gene, whereas 80%+ of the people who claimed to have no faith or claimed to be atheists were missing that gene and had this one instead, you could show correlation there. Like, yeah, there seems to mm-hmm. be this pattern holds, but we don't know what that pattern is. It all reminds me very much of the saying, numbers never lie, which a lot of people for a long time were very fond of like throwing out there as if it was like a mic drop statement, mm-hmm. an agreement. Like, the numbers don't lie, man. And then they would just throw out the numbers at you and you're like, okay, cool. What do those numbers mean? And by the way, only use numbers to explain it to me. Oh, wait.
Right.
Like, are being able to identify patterns, yes, that's science's job. However, the interpretation of those patterns require more than just specifically scientific knowledge.
Right.
The scientist has to step beyond the realm of science when trying to establish those connections.
Yeah, they firmly go into the realm of philosophy, and they should, because, like, one of the things that you said is that, you know, about the making the claims, like, they will do their work and then they will publish it, knowing full well that the science community will then attack it ferociously, but not in a bad way. Like, they're not mad about it. Not
seeking to destroy it, but seeking to verify it.
Right,
and it can only be verified by testing.
And the more people you have poking it, the more you can tell if it holds water or it doesn't hold water, and then it gets better. And that is the scientific version of meaningful conversation.
Yes.
You know, and so, like, the need to be right all the time isn't science.
No.
You know, like, that's not what it is. And so, like, if I was going to drill into my life lesson here, I think it's about, I'm trying to pull it all together. It's all around that need to be right. And it doesn't matter who you're talking with, really. Like, it could be an antagonistic atheist. It could be a Bible thumping Christian, right?
Oh yes.
And they need to be right. And that's an insecurity in themselves. Right. And so, like, being able to identify that insecurity and knowing how to address that is a skill, because I'm going to say very few people in the world address that properly. I'm one of them that doesn't do it properly. I usually tend to just disengage because I find that as soon as you poke an insecurity, it's usually responded to with a lash out of any way, shape, or form. And that's what I'm not good at handling with. And that the coworker I had could be really mean. And so, like, I didn't, once you poked his insecurity and he started lashing out, it's like your week was ruined, because he would sabotage everything you did. And it was not enjoyable. So I would just disengage. And so learning that and knowing that it's not, like, it should motivate us to pursue truth, to be secure in our faith while knowing that we don't know everything. And then also understanding that when they lash out, that's their insecurity and not your insufficiency to communicate your faith.
Ooh, that was good. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, man, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think, my life lesson is the idea that conversation requires vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And whether that's me having a conversation with another person, whether it's my mind having a conversation with the world around me as it interacts with it, my conversation with my God, my conversations with myself as I'm trying to understand who I am and why I do the stupid stuff that I know I ought not do, but here I go again. All of those conversations, in order for them to be an actual conversation, it requires that vulnerability, that willingness to find out I'm wrong. Because it's not about being right all the time. It's about becoming right. It's about, like, finding out what is right and then lining myself up with that as I go, as opposed to trying to force the world to align with my definition and trying to bring it all in on that narrow path. Because the only way I can do that is to make my world incredibly small.
Yeah, your shoulders aren't that broad.
Well, yeah, my shoulders aren't that broad. And, like, the number of things that I can control, the number of facts that I can, like, force to fit into that box is going to be an incredibly small amount.
Yep.
And so I'm going to have to cut out almost everything of importance and significance.
Yeah.
And going back to that idea of the strict materialism, or, again, to be in the interest of fairness, you know, the Bible thumping fundamentalism,
yeah,
where it's like, I have to, in order for me to be right, I have to limit everything down to this one thing. Because if it's one thing, maybe I can make everything fit.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you bring in two things, oh, no, 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 no. That's out of...
That's too much.
Yeah, that way too much, man. And so, yeah, like, we've got to, like you said, it's important to notice other people's insecurities, but it's also important to identify our own. For and, sure. like, be willing to be vulnerable with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when we'll find out the truth and be able to be secure.
Yeah. Yeah. That shit makes me think of C.S. Lewis when he talks about how, like, he never doubts the faith more than after he's spent a bunch of time defending it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so, like, that sense of insecurity, like, you're going to have your own insecurities, and being vulnerable enough to admit to be like, I am struggling with some doubt right now. But if you acknowledge it, then you can start working through it. And then, you know,
you can identify where the doubt is coming from.
Yep.
And, like, move to find the answers to your doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's big. I like that. That's interesting. It's good stuff. Yep. It's the world, man. There's a whole lot to be talking about right now, and we're not doing a very good job about talking to each other. Like, it's a crazy thing.
Lots of tribalism.
Yeah, it's and again, just listening to these things. Like, I knew that these school board conversations were like that, but then just listening to them, like, you're always thinking, like, oh, it's not in my city, though. But like, oh, no, it's absolutely in my city. Oh, it's just down the road, you know? So it's it's there. And I have needed quite a bit of coffee to keep my eyes open while listening to these people do this stuff. And so if you are in need of some coffee, I would love to roast that and send that to you. So that's how you could support these meaningful conversations, is hop on the inkledo.com, go to the shop, order a couple bags of coffee, some swag, some coffee mugs. We got some cool stuff up there. The shirts are pretty cool. I'm trying to come up with some new designs too for the summer. So we'll see how that goes. And then, that's how you can support us there. And then, you know, reach out to us on social, let us know. We're trying to figure out some fun ways to get back onto social media and start talking to people and getting some pop-ups going again. So we're trying to get back out there and make it happen, but we're trying to do it the right way. And so lots of prayer and lots of discernment there. So if you wouldn't mind throwing in a prayer for us, we would appreciate that.
Always.
You got anything else on your mind there, man?
Nah, I'm good.
Right on. With that, we will say
adieu.